Blue Apron Take Back Dinner.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Liars Club. I'm Felicia Michaels.
And I'm Jessica Lavant.
And what we do here at the Liars Club is we have two of our comedy pals come on. We ask them to tell two stories. One is the truth, one is a lie. And then we try to figure out with the people that are playing along which one is the lie. Am I correct, Jessica?
We always are.
All right, Jessica, would you please introduce our guests?
I'd love to. This gentleman has been on our podcast, two times now. He was on your special birthday podcast, and he's really good at lying. He's directed the movie A Stand-Up Guy, writer on Videos After Dark, tours with Bob Saget. And then what's that new show that you're on, Mike?
By the way, those are two lies.
Okay.
Why?
I'm just kidding.
Did you call him successful? Because that's a lie.
Yeah. what show? What? Oh, I have a new show on Ficto. It's called Who the F is Mike Young?
Yes, I've been seeing your hats and all that. This is fucking Mike Young.
Yay!
I'll put on my own swag. I'll go put a Who the F is Mike Young hat on.
Yeah,
do it.
And then this next gentleman, I'm so excited. I've been trying to get him on forever. I'm lucky enough to call him a friend. He performs in sold-out stadiums across the world. First comic to record a Netflix special, comedy special, his current special is on Amazon, Deported. He is comedy legend, paving the way for all of us. This is Mr. Russell Peters.
Why, thank you.
Michael Evans, our on-air producer, is also playing along. He will be writing down your stories. And so what we're going to do is we're going to rotate the stories around. We'll probably start with Mike since he's already done the podcast a couple of times. And at the very end, Michael will do a recap and then we'll take a vote. And yes, that is Mike Vargas playing along, one of the best comedy fans in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show, Mike Vargas. Welcome, Jason Marino and Kia. Also, longtime fans, thank you very much for joining us today. And let's get to it, Mike Young. What kind of prostitute story are you going to tell today?
That's so funny. I started going through my stories, and like Bobby Lee told a real story the other day on a podcast about me and him. So I'm like, that was going to be my story for this. So I had to switch it up.
But nobody knows the story, so you're good.
Yeah.
Well, I got another one. So, all right, here's my first story. I just dive into it, Felicia?
Sure, do it.
Okay, so Russell, you already know my family loves boxing. We're like big boxing fans. I grew up in, outside Detroit. The great Emmanuel Stewart trained 6 world champions out of the Kronk boxing gym. So when I was growing up, I was not only a huge fan of boxing, but I boxed a little bit in the amateurs and I was around fighters. And as I got older, I turned like 23 years old and I was done in the amateurs and I was just kind of training, staying in shape. But I kept in touch with a few of the professional boxers and I became friends with these guys. So I ended up being friends with like Tommy Hearns, who's like 6-time world champ. And I knew Julio Cesar Chavez because Emmanuel was tight with him. Yeah, these are world champion, some of the greatest ever. Chavez.
They are actually some of the greatest ever.
I mean, Russell, you saw classic boxing when they were showing Chavez De La Hoya. That was awesome.
Yep.
When he
fought Sweet Pea and they ripped him off? They ripped off Sweet Pea twice.
I know. God, I love. Rest in peace, Sweet Pea. So yeah, Russell's a huge boxing fan, so he knows this is real. So Chavez is about to go into retirement, and when I went to college, at Arizona. So there was a Kronk West boxing gym down in a Mexican neighborhood.
Kronk.
Yeah, Kronk is a boxing gym out of Detroit that produced 14 world champions, but there was a Kronk West in Tucson, Arizona, where I went to college. So I go back there and I'm training. I'm just working with fighters because in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to be involved in boxing no matter what. So Julio Cesar Chavez, he had a little kid who's coming up and who now is like a ranked. I never thought he reached his level that he should.
No, his son's a bum.
It's too bad because he had all kinds of talent, but just you can't grow up a spoiled kid.
But yeah, no, his son's a bum.
So long story short, I become friends with their family anyway, and Emmanuel gave me the blessing.
Wait, hold on a sec, Mike. Sorry to interrupt. How did you become friends with the Chavez family when they don't speak English?
Because Julio, his son does speak English.
Slid in my lady's DMs before.
The kid is like 16 years old at this point, and he's got drug problems, some serious problems, whatever. So Emmanuel Stewart is going to take a trip. He's a good friend of our families, and he's going to Mexico City to see the Chavez family because he wants to talk to the kid, Chavez's kid, and get him on the straight and narrow. So I'd never been to Mexico City before. Emmanuel and my dad were great friends. I was like, Emmanuel, is there any way I could like go meet the legends? Like just hang out around that world? Like I know he lives in some crazy, I've never been there. I know he lives in some crazy mansion. Let me just go. So he lets me go. So I go to Mexico City with Emmanuel, and we go to Mexico City. We go to Chavez's place and we go there. And his kid is unfortunately like just in bad shape, like pills or whatever it is. I'm not really getting involved in that, but Emmanuel is. So Emmanuel basically tells, Emmanuel's got one of his boys that translates for the other Mexican dudes that are there. And he's basically saying, yo, we're going to get your kid to a rehab. We're going to take care of your kid. He's going to be good. So I'm there and I've got like my one piece of luggage. That's not even luggage. It's like a, it's in between a backpack and a luggage, whatever. It's like a bag. So we're getting ready. So Emmanuel.
It's just like a bag.
It is. It's just a bag. I don't even know what to, it's just a bag. It's like not good. It's not roll away luggage. It's not a backpack. It's just, I got socks and 2 days worth of shit. So bottom line is Emmanuel gets his son and Chavez Sr., he gets them to agree to go to like this rehab that he knows. He's going to get his kid in shape.
So in Mexico?
No, he's going to bring him back to the States.
In Arizona, Utah, Nevada, out in the desert?
No, he's Emmanuel's got, he tells him that he's got a guy, don't ask me how, but like we're from Detroit. Uh-huh. Emmanuel had 14 world champions and he just knows people that can help you. Like,
right.
If God forbid you're in like drug trouble and you got problems. So we're getting ready so we all stay the night there. And the next day we're going back to Detroit. Okay. This is pre 9/11. And we go back and I grab my bag and what I think is Emmanuel's Louis Vuitton bag. And we go and we're going to the airport in Mexico City, 4 or 5 of us. And we go through whatever, the detector, the metal detector. We go through the luggage carrier. And the bag I grabbed was some dope dealer from the house's bag.
Wait a minute. You said you just had some bag and you mistake.
My bag. No, I had my bag and I grabbed what I thought was Emmanuel's Louis Vuitton bag. I just thought it was his luggage, like his one piece, like nice Louis Vuitton bag. I just grabbed the wrong bag.
So this was the one bag travel trip with everybody.
2 days, I'm on one bag. Emmanuel's got his bags and they got their real luggage. Like this kid's going to go for 14 days or whatever it is, 30 days. And his dad really didn't say much. But as we're going through through customs, before you even go through like the main conveyor belt thing, whatever, they do like, they take my bag, they take the Louis Vuitton bag, it goes through and there's about half a kilo of cocaine in it. And it was Chavez's friend or whatever, some drug dealer that was like in their crew. And all of a sudden I am going through with half a kilo. The guys, the security people there, they knew Chavez. So he immediately started talking to him. And one of them, like broken English, recognized Emmanuel Stewart. The bottom line was I did not get in trouble. And they let Chavez and our whole crew go through. Obviously, they kept the drugs, whatever. But we somehow got out of it. But I almost went to a Mexican prison for the rest of my life.
You didn't get in trouble for that?
No trouble. Julio, and you could just look at, I mean, he was the most famous person in basically Mexico history. Like he's just.
He still is very, very revered.
He's revered. And he just made it go away. And it was an honest mistake. I mean, obviously it was an honest mistake. I'm not a drug dealer, but I grabbed the wrong.
Anymore.
I had to give it up. Once Russell put me on the road, the dope game was over.
Mike, you have been through some shit. And how have you not been in more trouble than.
I mean, well, I've been in some trouble, but nothing. I haven't been like in jail or anything for more than a day.
I don't mean to be rude, but like, how old are you, Mike?
I'm 62 years old.
Okay, then the story makes sense. No, I'm kidding. Because that's like 20 years ago, almost 22 years ago, right? 9/11, right?
Yeah,
9/11 was 19 years ago.
19 years ago. 19. This was right before 9/11. And I boxed since I was a kid. I've known those guys my whole life, and I've done a lot of
that part. I believe because you told the prostitution story about Vegas and your friend was a new people and you guys went and then you shared a prostitute. Remember when you told that story?
You know, it's
you shared a prostitute?
Yo, Russ.
I mean, technically, you're always sharing a prostitute.
Everybody on here has basically shared a prostitute at this point.
Hey.
But I started thinking about my stories, and they're all like weird, dark, and rebellious. But I'm not that type of guy, really. I just—he's
really not.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm a neurotic Jew. I just happen to have been. I've seen things.
Right.
Same. Same without the Jew part.
Okay.
You're from Detroit.
Listen, Russell's got some dark secrets. All right, they probably won't come out today, but believe me, he's lived a life.
Maybe they will, Michael.
Yeah, you never know.
Russell's the most gentleman gangster I ever met.
Well, he is. He did say he was from Detroit and before. So was the guy that... go ahead, Jessica.
All right. Did they have a lot of Jewish people in Detroit?
Oh, yeah.
Big
somebody had to own it.
Big
Jewish community in Detroit.
Yeah. All right.
And very involved in the boxing community, might I add. People like Jackie Callen, who was a very, very famous manager, fight manager.
Yeah, first female to have a middleweight world champion. First female.
James Toney was her fighter.
I sparred with him.
So, you sparred with James Toney?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that does not sound fun.
It was not fun at all.
No.
Did you ever get your nose broke from boxing?
Yes. Yes. I got my nose broke from other bad shit, but boxing definitely broke my nose.
Yeah.
But have you ever stopped a jewelry thief?
No, but I had some hood that I know tell a story how he robbed a jewelry store back in the 90s, and it turned out it was my... This dude was from Boston telling me how he robbed a jewelry store in Detroit. It was my boy's jewelry store.
Hilarious.
But did no, I've never robbed a jewelry.
See the kilo of cocaine?
Did I see it?
Yeah, did you actually see it?
Yeah, I saw it because they opened up the bag and they...
And how big did it look like? How big?
I mean, it wasn't like a full kilo, but it looked like this, like a half a brick, if you call it a brick. I never dealt drugs or I sold a little weed, but no cocaine.
Okay.
So it shocked me. It shocked me and my heart fell and I was like, this is it. Here goes Mike to a Mexican prison. Now my dad can finally be proud.
All right, we're ready for the next story. Jason Marino says this is a plausible pre-9/11 movie setup. Oh, and
I have my theories on this and doubts. And
you do? Well, please tell us what is your theory?
Well, here's my problem with the story, Michael.
Okay. Oh yes, get into it.
Please tell me.
Knowing the age of the said Chavez spider that you're talking about, some of this math doesn't add up.
Like, oh, that's not true. That's not true. My year math might be off. Like I'm not the guy that can go like in 99, I was at the Prince concert. I don't know what years or what, but go ahead. You could.
If it was 2000 and he was 16, I could believe it because that adds up.
Yeah.
Wasn't 9/11 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. I said that's what it was.
First of all, I don't like your tone.
All right.
That's a house for me to stay in. I can't isolate in an apartment anymore.
You know, I like how when you were questioning, you almost folded, Mike. That sounded like you kind of almost got...
Yeah, he started curling his little leftover Jewish curl or whatever.
You think this is my tell?
That's your tell.
Yeah.
He had to rewind his brain.
I used to have a buddy that lied. His tell was this.
That's a pretty easy tell.
I know. Yeah. I was there to pick you up. So now Russell tells his story.
So a friend of mine gets out of jail. And he starts telling me all these jail stories. And this one story he starts telling me is insane. Like he's talking about how he got transferred from prison to prison to prison. He did 33 years. So he did, you know, so he's telling, and he did 14 years in solitary confinement.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So he's telling me about how he got transferred from Supermax prison to Supermax prison to Supermax prison and how he was in this one prison. And the COs in this prison were not corrupt. They just weren't. Like all the other prisons, the COs were corrupt. You can pay them off and you can get whatever you need to do. If you want to get into a cell and kill some guy, you pay them off and they'll let you in the cell for a minute. You do what you got. You want to fight them, kill them, do what you got to do, and then leave. The COs will turn the head for that. But this one prison, the COs were not corrupt at all. So this guy kept telling me, yo, I really want to get that guy in whatever the cell is. And he's like, but the COs just not letting it happen. So this guy would watch the COs every day. He would watch the CO open the guy's cell. And they had the keys on a chain. And we'd put it right back in his pocket. So he'd take it out, open the door, and put it right back in his pocket. Every day he would watch him do this. And then one day he did it, and the key missed his pocket, so it just swung. And then the CO picked it up and put it back in his pocket. The guy goes, yo, I saw the key today. I saw the key. And he goes, it's one up, half down, across, a little bit this way and that way. And then so the guy went back to his cell, drew it, carved it out of soap, hardened it, made a key, got in the cell, and killed the guy.
Whoa.
I hate that I believe that story.
Russell, you're a good player because to do someone else's story, that's tricky. That's tricky.
What do you think? You mean like to quote Shawshank Redemption?
I was thinking it was the Green Mile or something there for a minute.
Yo.
Did he tell you how he hardened the soap? Like how do you?
Yeah, he just kept cutting it, and then carving it, and then he got some plastic, heated it up over the soap. Until he got it to the right size, and he just, that was it. You only need it to open the door once. You don't need it forever.
Yeah, but how big that key must have been, like, that big, right? Like that.
It's one of those old jail keys, right? Like, you know,
it's the Green Mile key, you saw. You know,
key to the city.
Key. Mixed with the Wizard of Oz.
Mouse friend, yeah.
I mean, listen, I know Russell's got some badass friends that absolutely have been in and out of prison. That's really? A little 14 years solitary.
What the fuck? Solitary.
And we're complaining about 3 months of fake isolation.
Yep, I actually had to call him and ask him how he got through this.
Right.
Has this person that you're talking about been on Christina and Tom's show? Okay.
No.
Is he still in?
No, he actually passed away yesterday.
Get the fuck out of here.
Literally yesterday.
How old was he?
He would have been 63 in 10 days.
Did you grow up with him?
No, we had, I met him when he got out of prison through a friend of mine. This guy was like a very notorious gangster in New York.
Right. Mob gangster or biker gangster?
No, street guy.
Just a street guy.
Whoa. Many bodies though. Very, a lot of bodies underneath him.
Yeah.
And he just but loved didn't... me. Like, Russell, you're funny.
He loved me. I mean, you know, I was one of the first dudes he met when he got out of jail and I took care of him. So he, you know, he was like, you know, he loved me.
So I gotta get to that level where I could just start taking care of ex-cons.
So, are you only telling this story because he passed away and you feel like you can? Because
I mean, he's told me so many stories, and I actually own the rights to his life story, so
I'm allowed to say.
Yes. Yeah, I have.
Have you met him?
No, but Jess? you talked about it when we were in Oxnard, I think.
Yeah.
You bought the rights to his story and wanting to make a movie or something ever out of it. I remember that for sure. So that's true.
Yeah.
I actually believe.
You believe this story?
Only, I mean, I've been at the Laugh Factory and then Russell's like, yo, come to dinner after. And all of a sudden, like half the Hell's Angels are sitting around eating pizza. So I believe whatever Russell says about a criminal. There's pieces of other movies I've seen, but I think this one might be.
I'm going to have to hear Russell's second story. So we're just going to move it along unless anybody has any last questions they want to ask about this story. Like, how did he kill the guy once he got into the guy's cell?
Oh, that part, I don't know. He probably just shanked him.
Yeah.
He's a killer.
If you want to kill somebody and you're in jail, you don't have a lot of options. You get a sharp object and you just stab them.
Right.
That key had two uses.
Yeah. And it was the key to his problems.
Russell is the Indian Henny Youngman. I swear, we got to do like Heaven Can Wait, and he comes back as Russell, but he's a Henny Youngman. I know, Henny, no one's better with one-liners in the country.
Russell, you age like a fine wine. You get better looking.
Keep talking, but Mike's older than me, and he looks way younger than me. So I'd say Mike Young is the winner of the young-looking old guy contest.
Wait, Mike is really 62?
No,
he's not that old, but he's
okay. But okay, how old are you, Mike? All right, he's not going to tell. All right, you good? I was like, there's no fucking way, 62.
By the way, suddenly I'm very quiet.
I'm the pickled Jew.
So let's move it on to Mike's second story then, unless anyone has a question.
Okay, my second story. All right, this is more melancholy. This is more of a melancholy young story. So my dad was 47 years old. I was, 19, 20, something like that. And my dad, unfortunately, had gotten cancer, got bad cancer. He was very young, and he was hooked up on oxygen. I mean, it's a whole thing. Like, one weekend, we're literally in Vegas having a great time, and then all of a sudden, he's coughing. He doesn't look good. It went quick. So by the time he gets to Detroit after the trip, he's diagnosed with pancreatic, and he is in bad shape. And he's 5 days later after that, he's like on oxygen, literally. So he's on oxygen. Me and my brother, we both leave college. We go back to Detroit. And we always knew that our family was like in the scrap metal business, because that's just what my dad did. He had a dump truck. Like, we were like a blue collar. He had a dump truck. He would leave at 5 a.m, come back. And, you know, we never really like counted money. We never struggled to eat.
Wait, hold on a second. What kind of Jew doesn't count money?
Me and my brother, my dad had that shit on lock. If you even faked grab money out of his hand, he'd attack you. So he's literally on oxygen. It's a bad scene at the Young House, needless to say. But about five, you know, we don't know how long he has. No one knows. It's pancreatic. No one knows about the shit at the time. So one day during this whole thing, my dad's on oxygen, and he tells my brother, he's like, "Yo, Rob, go start the car. And Michael, you go in your mom's closet and get the shoebox." I'm like, "What shoebox?" He's like, "Above the shoes, there's a shoebox full of money." I was like, "What?" So I go into my mom's closet and I grab this shoebox that I never knew existed. Otherwise, I'd have been taking money my whole life. And I grab this shoebox, and there's probably, you know, 75, 100. I didn't count it, but there might have been $75,000 in cash loaded up in a shoebox. And my dad's like, "Take $15,000, put it in an envelope, and just meet me in the car. I'm going to get dressed." So I'm like, "What the hell is going on here? Like, it's just totally surreal." So I got $15,000 cash in an envelope, and my brother's got the car started in the driveway. And my dad, he comes out and he gets in the car and he sits in the back and he's like, "Listen, we're going to go, you know, go down to 8 Mile. We're going to the scrapyard. You're going to go see this guy named Vern, who my whole life growing up going to the scrapyard, there was always like this little guy that just was at the front of the scrapyard. Like, when you weigh your truck, you go in to get the money, you know, whatever." My dad would get like a check every month from this place.
And Vern Troyer?
Yeah. What's that?
Vern Troyer?
It's the same size, but way wider. And so we go see Vern. So we drive down to the scrapyard, and it's like something, this is like out of a movie. We're like, "What the fuck is going on?" And my dad's like, "Listen, you're going to go in and see Vern with the money. I'm going to stay in the car. Don't tell him that I'm here. I don't want anyone to see me like this." So my brother pulls into the yard. I got $15,000 in an envelope. I'm a little bit nervous because I've never like paid off Vern. I've never handled money, but I knew that my dad did get a lot of cash. Like, it was a cash heavy business, scrap metal back then. So I go into the scrapyard and it's like loud. It's like boom, boom. And like outside, you know, cars are getting lifted with, you know, the magnet, like the whole thing. It's a real fucking 8 Mile scrapyard. you know? And so I walk up.
One more question. Sorry. Were your palms sweaty and were your knees weak?
Yo, you would so think that this, that I'm just taking 8 Mile and putting it like you did with Shawshank.
Was there vomit on your sweater and was it mom's spaghetti?
Yeah. I was literally vomiting spaghetti on my sweater.
No, it sounds kind of like what's that murder show that was huge with the guy?
The Making of a Murder?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like it, but it's not. So I go in, I got $15,000 in the envelope, and it's in my like I stuffed it like in my pants. I go see Vern at the desk. He's the only one there. And he's like, I guess he had heard that my dad wasn't doing well. So he's like, how's your dad? I'm like, he's not doing great. I'm sorry to hear that. And he gives me a hard hat, like a construction hard hat. He goes, put this on and follow me. So he puts on a hard hat. I put on the hard hat. And it's just, and this is not a scene from Fred Flintstone, Russell. I know you're thinking this is the Flintstone episode.
Not yet.
So we go outside, two of us. I got the hard hat. And I'm talking to him in the outdoor part of the scrapyard. And it's loud and crazy. There's crane shit. And so we're talking and we're just like talking like short story shit. And all of a sudden he's like, okay, now. And I hand him the money. I hand him $15,000 and he stuffed, and he was kind of like fat. And I'll never forget, he like stuffed it down his pants. You know, he just like real quick stuffed it down his pants. And he's like, okay, let's go back inside. And so we go back inside. And we small talk. And he's like, you know, tell your dad, you know, I'll talk to him soon, da, 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 small talk. And basically it was, I realized like later that it was like my dad's way of saying like, when I pass, understand that if you want to keep this scrap metal account, this is how business is done. Like you have to pay this guy off so that we can keep getting brass. And it was like our brass account. So at the time brass was like 90 cents a pound, which was a fortune. And my dad was all cash all the time. So he bought our house in cash. You know what it is, Russ. He left my mom with nothing to pay.
You guys were basically brass monkeys. Those funky monkeys.
We were. This is 100% the Beastie Boys mixed story. You saw the documentary. So we go. So I get back in the car and my dad's like, what happened? I'm like, I gave him the money. He's like, did he ask? Well, I said, yeah, he asked about you. He's like, good, let's go home. And on the way home, he's just like, listen, you know, every time you go to the brass account from here on out, once a month, you have to give him 10% of what we make. And that was just the way it was. And then we went home. And then, you know, then the sad part is my dad passed away like literally like a week later. And that was just a crazy moment that sticks out because it was always like, what does a man do to make sure that his family's going to be cool, you know, even when he's at the end of his rope? That was the theme. So I took that, you know, I took that and decided not to have kids or get married.
You made the right decision on both ends.
I heard.
Yes, yes, you did.
Trust me.
Yeah. So that's my second story.
Wow. That's so we either have to believe that this is where you learn to be smooth, right? Which makes sense because you're a smooth guy. Like you always hang out with the right people, like, cause you know how to start a conversation and do the thing. So that part makes sense. Or the other story where you were such a young dork that you picked up a drug dealer's suitcase.
A young dork or just a dummy who thought he was grabbing luggage for the rest of the crew. But yeah.
Yeah. Any questions?
Well, I mean, I have my theories again.
Okay, what are your theories?
My theories go back to his first story. Okay. He said he was 23 when this happened, and that was 20 years ago. I know for a fact you would have had, that would have had to have been 30 years ago for that to happen.
Ah, busted.
I won't accept being busted because I really am not good with like years and exact dates. I'm just telling you, this kid was 16.
No, but you said you were 23.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was about 23.
No, you said you came home from college. You guys said you and your brother came home from college back to Detroit to do that.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the Emmanuel Stewart story.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
No, but I didn't graduate. I was 23 when that happened, but it wasn't directly after college.
You said you're about 19 when this happened.
Yeah, with my dad's situation.
Yeah. And then subsequently 4 years later, it was 2000.
I'm running cocaine for the Mexican cartel. I've done a lot, Russell. What have you done?
So your dad, you guys, he worked in that business. And then this is when you were doing boxing. You said you were like training to be a boxer too?
No, my dad, I mean, that was when I learned how to box when I was like 11 years old. And I just boxed all the way through till, you know, I always.
So you stopped. Same. We did the same thing. We boxed and then we were like.
Russell and I, exactly.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
We both don't want to admit we don't want to get hit in the face. It just hurts.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not exactly the most fun thing in the world.
No.
Well, it's also a good strategy. I'm sorry to tell you to say that. Here's a story about my dying father, and it feels terrible calling you out on it, but it is a bold move. I mean.
I know, because I didn't want to keep going with like all these. You feel like I'm like a degenerate, like a hooker.
Yeah, but you are. That's why we believe you.
That was back in the day.
I'm curious that no one's asking any questions of Mike here. I mean, that's a pretty crazy story.
I mean, I I've known the Yalovsky Young family for some decent amount of time now, like mom, brother, sister-in-law, nephews. So I know the family pretty well.
Yes, he does.
But I did not know about the scrap metal business.
I know.
Really? Really?
The new development, Michael.
It sounds like a mob movie or something. There's something that you've written again.
Yeah.
The same name as Maserati.
Is this like deleted scenes from My Man's a Loser?
I'm surprised you don't know, Russ. Like, you're family.
I know. I feel slighted.
My brother stayed at your house more than he stayed at my place.
It's true.
So let me ask you this, Mike, did anyone else in your family stay in that business?
Yeah, my brother, well, after my dad passed away, we both, my brother took over the business, and then we ended up selling the business to my uncle, and it was just a business that was kind of run by like older, it was just like older, I don't want to say underworld, because that's not, it's just a different. It's a really street type business. So it's, everything's a handshake. It wasn't a business for a 19 and, you know, 18 year old, like my brother at the time to handle. So my brother tried to run it for a year and it got heavy. It just got heavy, you know?
Well, metal gets heavy.
Yeah.
It was heavy metal.
No idea. By the way, whenever it rained and like, you know, you weigh your truck, my dad would try to keep that rainwater in the truck at the whole, you know what I mean? Just weigh it with the rainwater. Oh. Every ounce counted.
Wow. Look at you putting in a little detail like that, trying to trick us like that.
No, my dad had a little magnet on his keychain for life. He could be anywhere. If that shit was magnetized, he's like, I could scrap that for $38 right there. So ask Russell if he's getting new stair railings.
Okay. All right.
You'd have loved my dad, bro. He was a real one.
Yeah. Well, mom's a real one for sure.
For sure. She can't stop.
Wait to really tug at our heartstrings, you fucking asshole.
I know. Jason Marino's like, this tragedy is trickery. Think closer to home. So he does think this one is true. So Kia thinks her trickery. Story is probably the lie. Because
the name of my album.
Is your father's death and a lie? I don't know.
I'll do anything for a Zoom.
All right, Russell, your second story.
Oh, so I know my father. Anytime he clears his throat, go ahead.
So my father was as well on his deathbed, and he told me that there's a bag of rice in the kitchen, and that in that bag of rice. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. My second story. Let me see. Hold on.
I knew it.
Just thinking. Hold on. So, I'm working at Wendy's.
Fuck.
I was the shift manager. And they had asked me to fire this guy. I was about 18. And I was like, oh, I don't want to fire him. And they're like, no, you have to fire him. that's your job. And I go, well, that's kind of a shitty part of my job. And I don't want to like ruin somebody's, I thought firing them from Wendy's would be ruining their lives. So I was like, I don't want to ruin their life. And they were like, well, if you don't fire them, we'll fire you. And I was like, wow, you guys are dicks, right? So I said, all right, I'll do it at the end of my shift. But I knew I wasn't going to do it. So I had called all my friends. I'd gone to the office. It was like 1988. And I called my friends. I'm like, yo, come by Wendy's and come through the drive-thru. And I just started, about 8 or 9 cars of my friends all showed up. And I just loaded them all up with a bunch of free Wendy's and like triple burgers with like fuck tons of cheese and large milks, Frosties and drinks and all kinds of shit. And then I made one of them wait for me to give me a ride home because I knew I was about to be fired. And the story's not that great, but it's a fucking story. You know what I mean?
Game. This is a game. So
I so believe this story because I worked at Burger King. Like in 88. I feel like we had parallel lives.
We do, only without the scrap metal.
And you can really get a lot of shit for your friends out of a fast food place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You sure can.
Yeah.
I worked at Taco Bell.
Yeah, I worked at Burger King too, but I never made it past drinks. That's where they would start you, but I'm dyslexic, so I hear everything backwards and they let me.
I was the shift manager. And I kept telling people I was the manager, but I was really just the shift manager, which I don't know what the fucking title means.
Yeah, what does that even mean?
I was the manager of that shift. There was still a manager above me.
Did you ever go back to that Wendy's and work, or that was it? Last day, fire?
It was the last day, kid.
How long?
I think I lasted like 2 months in that job.
So you there for 2 months and you became shift manager at the age of 18?
I started as shift manager.
I worked at Winn-Dixie and I became front end manager like that. I mean, I could see Russell doing that. He's really good with people.
Yeah, shift manager. It was not like a real title. It's not like it said that on my badge or nothing.
So Russ, were you thinking about comedy in 88?
I was already thinking about it, yeah. Because I started in 89. So it must have actually been 89. It was the summer of 89 because I was still 18. I was about to be 19. And then I was a couple months away from starting stand-up.
So you didn't go to college at all?
No, it wasn't not in the cards for me, kid.
All my
we didn't have a scrap metal business. My mom worked in Kmart.
All my smartest, most successful friends didn't go to college. It's all fucking backwards. All
right, I'm in!
Swear to God. What a waste.
So I guess where I get a little tripped up in the story is that you said when you were you didn't want to ruin somebody else's life because you thought getting fired from Burger King would ruin somebody else's life.
Wendy's,
but then you were going to ruin your own life by stealing all that food and giving it to your friends.
See, I didn't look at it as stealing. I just looked at it as hooking my friends up with some free food because I had friends who worked at McDonald's who would hook me up with free food, so I just figured it was a thing you could just do. You could just hook people up. They're not going to count the meat.
Yeah.
And this is different. He's not taking from somebody that's trying to work a minimum wage job. He's taking it from the man, you know, or the girl, Wendy. You know,
yeah, so like say 8 cars, 4 people per car, and about 4 or 5 burgers per car.
Yeah.
Russell's
there's a lot of food with
the diabetics.
Wow. Oh yeah. I was the man.
Kia says burgers and cheese is his love language. First is a lie. Second truth for both. And there's a lot of Indian franchise owners, Wendy's franchise owners. Is that true?
This was not the time of Indians owning Wendy's yet. This was the late 80s and it was Canada. And the Indians in Canada are all very blue collar. Unlike the ones in America who are upwardly mobile, doctors, lawyers, and other noteful things.
Hey, why did they want you to fire the guy they wanted you to fire?
I don't even know why. I can't remember why. It's just like, you got to let them go. I'm like, no, that sucks, dude. I don't want to do that.
I don't know.
Did you know that guy well? Did he have a family? Was he young? Was he a
kid? I don't remember if it was a guy or a girl, to be honest with you.
Knowing how sensitive.
I can't remember the gender of the person. I just knew I had to fire somebody. And I was like, I wasn't with it.
So how much food did you actually take?
I didn't take any. I just gave it away out the drive-thru window.
Okay. The weird thing is,
I threw in an extra one for me, so that way whoever's driving me home could say I could have something to eat on the way home.
Yeah, so how much altogether?
Russell
it must have been, honestly, it must have been about 20, whatever the math is on that, 20-something burgers.
Russell's so sensitive. I believe this because of how he is with people. Like, he'll just doesn't want to hurt a dude's feelings. But on the flip side, that he does know some psycho killers who've been in prison. So it would be like diabolical Russell to tell like a BS story that's super believable to be the lie.
Oh.
Like such an easy, he could come up with that in 2 seconds.
How dare you?
But
I'll show you 2 seconds, Felicia.
That first story where the guy, he owns that guy's rights, he would know all these intimate little stories though. 20 burgers? I just can't see Russell stealing like that.
I didn't steal it. I just gave it out the window, made him look like a customer.
It out the window.
Yeah, you see, there's a difference.
That's stealing.
There's a difference. Yeah, he's taking from the big corporation. He's not taking from blue collar person. He's trying to help them out.
Oh, here we go. The haves and the have nots. We're battling
it's
it
out. True. I was Robin Hooding it because we were all broke.
Totally. I believe it. I stole so much out of Burger King, they fired me for the chicken sandwich.
God, I should have been better at drinks.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm home, I don't want to run errands or have to figure out a meal plan, especially because I have kids. That's why Blue Apron is a great solution. Their chef-designed recipes are easy to follow and give you a balanced, delicious meal. Blue Apron is a quick and easy way to make high-quality meals that everyone can enjoy. Use promo code LIARS to get $30 off your first order. Blue Apron, take back dinner.
All right, so let's do a recap. And very quickly, Michael, and then let's take a vote. Let's start with Mike Young's stories.
All right, so in Mike Young's first story, he grew up boxing. His family's really into boxing. They knew boxers and kept in touch with some pros like Tommy Hearns and Julio Cesar Chavez and rest in peace to Sweet Pea. And Mike's in Tucson, Arizona, and he's training down at a gym. And Julio Cesar Chavez's bum-ass DM-sliding son is there, and he's training. And somehow, Mike ends up going with Emmanuel Stewart, a friend of the family and legend, and they're going to go down to Julio Cesar Chavez's place to get his son straightened out because he's all strung out on drugs and shit. And so Mike wants to go with, and he gets to go. And the kid's strung out. They're in Mexico City. And the next day, they're going to head back to Detroit. Mike grabs the wrong bag. He grabs a Louis Vuitton. Turns out it's full of drugs. He gets popped at customs for the drugs, and he gets off scot-free. They should change that to Mike Free. It seems like he gets off shit like that all the time. That's the first story.
Can I tell you what my problem with that story is?
Again?
Hell yeah.
The Chavez has never lived in Mexico City. They lived in Culiacan, Mexico.
That's not true. Julio Cesar Chavez, I don't know if that, maybe he had other homes. He was in Mexico City. But go ahead. Mm. That's fine. You don't have to.
All right.
He's Googling shit on the side.
I'm not. I'm right here. My laptop is open to my turntables.
Oh, shit. Okay, so
it's a fake
in his second story, Mike's 19 or 20 years old. His dad's 47, which is a tragically young age to get cancer. He's in bad shape. It escalates really quickly. Long story short, they're in the scrap metal business, brass monkeys, if you will. And dad tells Mike to get in the car to go get $15,000 out of a shoebox in the closet and then meet him in the car. And there's maybe 75 large in this shoebox that he's never seen before. So he meets him in the car with the money, and he goes, hey, we're going to go down to the scrapyard to meet Vern. So you get there. You don't know anything about Vern. You never met Vern. You go in by yourself with the 15 grand. You take it to Vern. A lot of small talk, a lot of bullshit, and you got a hard hat. It's loud. I don't know. I wrote down details, but long story short, you had to hand over $15,000 to Vern, and it was kind of just a strange look. Behind the curtain of what a man with a family might do to take care of them when he knows he's on his way out.
Mike, you're really good at this, man.
Hey, I appreciate that, Mike.
Like weaving the different pieces in, it's very good.
Wow. All right, well, let's take a vote. Like, what do you?
You know, I thought, honestly, I thought that when you reached for the shoebox, you would have gone into the wrong one and end up with a dildo in your hand or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're like, what the fuck? Pussycat Johnson?
Don't be mad if I still do that joke. Can't come up with a better tag.
Well, this is hard. This one's really hard for me. But I'm going to go with just knowing Mike and knowing his history, I'm going to say that he accidentally picked up cocaine, that he did do that, and he did box, and that happened. And the dad stuff is just he's trying to throw us off. And it feels like he stole that from a movie.
Yeah, it's called 8 Mile, right? That's the movie.
Yeah.
Russell, how long have you known Mike?
About 16 years.
And he's never said to you one time in 16 years, my dad was in the metal business.
Yeah, I don't recall that happening. I do know he was in the boxing business. Well, we were both boxing fanatics, so we would always talk about that, which is why I feel like I would have heard this other story first.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
It does make sense.
Jess, you remember that time that you told me you think that I said I thought I had bad luck in life, and you're like, you know, I think you actually have really good luck if you consider all the times your negligence has caused you to fuck up, and then you just didn't have to really pay for the consequences. Mike seems like that kind of guy. I can feel it on him. You know what I mean? I feel like he might have brought the cocaine to customs. I just don't see how you can get away with the customs cocaine situation. But also, you're with a boxing legend. I forgot about that part. I think I believe that story, though.
Yeah, Mike's smooth, though. That's why he's gotten away with so much and been with so many ladies.
Easy, Jess. What do you mean I've gotten away with so much? What are you talking about?
I like that that's the part of the sentence that you didn't like.
Yeah.
Listen, man.
Yes, I have been with a lot of ladies. But what do you mean I'm smooth?
It's neither true.
Well, I'm going to say that the first story, even though I'm in a lot of disbelief about the first story, but you're right. Mike is really cool and smooth, and he's always hanging around people. You're like, what the fuck is that about, right? So I could definitely
see. What does
that mean? It means you were hooping with Leonardo DiCaprio last time you were on the podcast.
Yeah, you hang out with people.
Because I could hoop.
Yeah, like when I met John Stamos, the first thing he asked me was, hey, do you know Mike Young? I'm like, oh, for fuck's sakes.
Oh, my God.
That's funny.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I think the first one is true, because I think that is weird if Russell's known him 16 years and he's never knew that Mike's dad was in the metal business, you know?
I knew that they were a working class family. I knew that, but... I mean, I didn't know what he did, but that being said, I kind of feel like I would have heard the story of going through the airport in Mexico with Emmanuel Stewart and Julio Cesar Chavez first.
That's true.
Now you're saying you don't think that story's true? You think that's
I think that might be an inconsistency, that story.
I almost wanted to tell the story. Russell had the light heavyweight champion was you were friends with him, Antonio Tarver.
Yes, I'm still friends with him.
Do you remember when he came to see you perform in Florida and he left and he was like kind of fighting a little bit with his girl?
Yeah.
And he left the room and his girl was like all over me. And I went into a full panic attack.
That was in Orlando.
In Orlando. And I was like, please do not talk to me.
And then he left. Didn't he leave her there or something?
He left her. Man, the girl was crazy, man. I got so scared. I went back to the hotel by myself. There was no way I was going to be with Antonio.
Well, that's a lie.
That's 100%.
No, I remember that being true. She couldn't wrestle. She couldn't wrestle, but you should see her box. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the next guy.
All right.
Okay, so do I say what's up or do we go to Russell's?
No, I'm going to change my vote because he got me on his side, but then he's like saying that some stuff doesn't work out. So now I'm going to say the dad story is true. I'm going to say the fucking dad story is true. God rest his soul.
Okay. Do I stay now?
Wait.
Yeah. Wait. Fuck it. Here's my problem. I don't believe the Julio Cesar Chavez manual. I don't believe that story, but the second one about his dad sounds like some shit he wrote. You know what I mean? It sounds like something he's worked on. It sounds, I don't know. I'm going first story true. Second story is a lie. Yeah. Fuck that brass monkey shit.
Yeah.
All right. Mike Vargas says he's with Jessica. He is.
I'm going one fake, two real.
All right. I'm voting with Russell. Mike, which story is the lie?
Russell was on point 100%. First story fabrication, based on a real story that happened to Emmanuel Stewart. I just put myself in the story. So that
my problem with it was that nobody spoke Spanish. neither Mike nor Emmanuel. So I'm like, this doesn't add up. Who the fuck's talking to them this whole time?
I had the interpreter there.
Why wouldn't I wait till after Russell voted to vote?
I thought you voted.
I voted. No, I should have waited till after Russell voted. Why would I? There's one guy here that knows you, and he's going to vote. I should have voted after him.
Yeah, no, I would have definitely. I definitely would have told Russell that story. Jess, you were off. Russell and Felicia, you nailed it. That was a full blown fabrication. The dad story was 100% true. Even though I will write about it and put it in something, but like it happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought that happened in White Boy Rick.
White Boy Rick calls me every week.
Really?
From federal prison. You want his life rights? They're cheap. I can get them for you.
He's already the movie's already out.
Oh yeah, I forgot. It wasn't good.
Wow.
Well, that was
good. I liked it.
Let's
I didn't love it. But yes, you are correct, Russ.
Yeah, you love it.
It happened to Emmanuel Stewart. He went to save Julio Cesar Sr. and he took the wrong bag and there was cocaine in it and they let him go. He told me that story.
That makes sense because Chavez is a national treasure over there.
Exactly. And he was
right. Fooled me this time.
Yeah, let's move on to Russell's story. Michael, will you recap his first story quickly, please?
Yeah. Yeah, in Russell's first story, basically he's got a friend that was in prison for a long time, 33 years total. He did 14 of them in solitary confinement, total psychopath. Wow, okay, I don't know about that, but that's a long time to be in solitary. He went from prison to prison to prison. He's telling him stories one time. He's telling one prison that he went to of all his prison stops. One of them was not corrupt. You couldn't pay off the guards to get something done, to do any violence or anything like that. So basically he wanted this guy killed and Russell's friend told him that he had to just watch every day, put the key in his pocket. He put the key in his pocket after he locked the cell. And one time it swung on the chain instead of going to the pocket and he got a look at the key and then he drew it and he redesigned it with soap, hardened the soap, used the key to unlock that he'd made to unlock the cell door. And he killed the guy. He got it done.
This fucking swinging key. If it wasn't for the swinging key and the X-ray vision and the X-ray vision of fucking Michelangelo in prison, then I'd be totally
more maybe trying to mold the lock or something with the soap or
definitely make
anything other
soap.
Than just got to look at it.
Well, I don't know, but if you're in prison for a long time and someone pulls out a key, you will drink that information in, though. Just imagine how long you think that guy was in prison by the time that happened.
Many, many years.
Damn. 33 fucking years. What do you got? I mean, you said he had a lot of bodies under him, but 14 solitary. How does that not drive you completely out of your fucking mind?
Said he read every book in the library and... and read literally every book in the library and learned how to meditate and breathe. And he said, that's what got him through.
Oh, wow.
Simple meditation.
Well, that's a positive twist on the route he went with all this.
Well, I mean, he was still getting people killed on the outside. He was just, he still had his connections. He was still a boss.
Is this the movie Hurricane?
And then Liev Schreiber shows up.
All right, dude.
He's killing me, man.
So
that's such an intricate story, though, to make up. Like, and he did the movement with the keychain, and then to, you know, I don't know, to make that all up. Mike made up a lot of stuff, but he took it from someone else's story. So maybe it is from a movie. Does this sound familiar as a movie? Anybody? The soap, though.
I mean.
No.
Yeah, soap. You see, soap is a weapon. It's they make things out of it. Soap is definitely real.
Right.
Russell came a little fast on the. You melt plastic over the soap. It's like, where's the
about that? Yeah.
Turning this into a fucking shop class.
Was he in solitary confinement when he did this?
No, he didn't do it. Another guy at the other jail he was at did it.
I watched every episode of Oz, and I'm trying to run through it. And I don't know if there was a soap key scene.
It would have been a very key scene if it was.
Nice.
All right. Well, Kia already said
15 years in solitary is like the most I've ever heard.
Yeah, well, it was 12 directly, and then when he got out, he killed another guy and went back in for two more.
Not a bad deal for
whole for 14 years.
Yeah, the for yeah, it was pretty crazy.
All right. Well, let's go to the second story. Recap that.
Second story, it's the summer of 89, and a young Russell is, he's 18, he's a shift manager at Wendy's, and they basically tell his higher-ups, go, yo, you got to fire this guy, and he doesn't want to ruin their life, which he thinks that will do at the time, and they go, but we'll fire you if you don't fire him, and he goes, well, okay, fine, then I'm going to do it later tonight. He knew that he wasn't going to do it later that night, so he kind of sets up for all his friends to show up, like, you know, four or five cars worth of friends. And loads them up with 20, 25 cheeseburgers and a bunch of goodies because he knew he was getting fired later anyway. And that's what happened. I got a question about that. How long from when you knew you were going to get fired if you don't fire him? Like, how long from the decision being made that you weren't going to fire the guy to you telling the friends to come? Or, like, to the friends showing up? Basically, how'd you wrangle up that? Was it short notice?
Yeah, I knew as soon as she told me, I was like, I'm not firing anybody. In my head, I already knew that. And then I was like, they were like, well, if you don't, we'll fire you. And I was like, all right, well, I'll fire him later. And then I went to the office and called my friends because I was like, yo, I'm not going to be working here after today. So if you guys want to come get hooked up, come through.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe. So they didn't show up all at once?
Yeah, it wasn't like eight cars at once, but it was like eight cars over the course of the 8-hour shift. Which is it was within a three to four hour period.
Russell doing proper math.
That solves my suspicion. I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't know how to gauge whether that prison one is true.
I think Russell's first story is true. I think his hamburger story was his boy. He just put himself in like Shake's shoes, like his boy's shoes.
Shake.
It's tough, Russell.
Well, I feel the first one.
I know he knows killers.
How many times were you around the guy that you bought the life story from? Did you guys like have regular meetings where you discussed all these stories, or you know?
We were friends, so we would hang out a lot.
Uh huh.
He would stay here. He came here for Thanksgiving, and when I'm in New York, he'd be with me constantly because he's from New York.
Right. I'm going to say the first story is true and the second story is a lie.
Me too. I'm going to stick with that too.
Yeah, and Kia also votes that way. First story true, second is false. Kia also thinks it's...
I mean, if it's not true, bro, and you got the swinging key...
I know.
You need to be writing movies.
But he is! Fuck!
The swinging key.
What's your...
I'm not writing them like Mike Young. You know, he writes all the time.
I stay right.
Wise guys.
With that key thing myself. I mean, you see it one time, and I know you say you can pinpoint stuff. And I would like to think Russell worked at Wendy's. That's it.
Twice.
What are you saying, Jess?
I just would like to know, like, because I worked at the Waffle House and Taco Bell, that there's something more out there for me. So it's giving me hope.
Maybe that Russell had to fire the guy that actually gave the burgers to the people out the window at that Wendy's. Maybe that's the truth.
Fast food was the go-to job for any hoodlum that came out of high school and didn't know what he was going to do.
Yeah.
True. Right, it was just so you could say you have a job.
100%.
I'm just because of that swinging key thing, like you guys have really got me that, and then Russell did that. I'm hypnotized. So the first one I think is not true, and I think that he did work at Wendy's and he did give away a lot of food.
All right, everyone's voted. Russell, which story is the lie?
The Wendy's story is the lie.
yes. I never win this game. I won today.
So I did work at Wendy's. I was asked to fire somebody, but I did not call all my friends. I got fired right away.
Wow.
Right. Wow. You working at Wendy's, fully believable. Getting fired, believable.
Because I didn't want to fire the person. I was like, I'm not firing them. Well, then we'll fire you. I said, do what you got to do.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Jessica. I didn't believe that you would be like, I don't want to ruin that person's life, but let me ruin my own life giving away all this food. Yeah.
And the story of the key is all true. And the reason he told me the story was he was just telling me how sharp some guys in prison are and how perceptive they are, but they use it for all the wrong things. Right. And it was just like, he was like, here, check this out. And he was telling me how the guy just saw the key. The guy missed his pocket. And it didn't swing like a few times. Like he missed his pocket. He just grabbed it and he put it back in his pocket. But the guy saw it and had with photographic memory and remembered the key exactly.
Wow.
That's an unbelievable story.
That is crazy. Yeah.
Great.
He died yesterday for real?
Yeah, he died yesterday.
Jesus. Sorry. How?
Yeah.
Wow.
Fucking Eddie.
Such great guests. Thank you so much for spending part of your pandemic with us. Thank you, Russell. Thank you, Mike. We always love having you on the show. Russell, you are awesome. Thank you for those great stories. Great story at the end to tie it off. And then the huge creative story, which was the truth. We certainly.
Yeah, and Mike, you did all right. Or whatever.
Yeah, you are.
At least I got the girls.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen. Cool. Listen, never mind Kawhi Leonard. We got the real L.A. Clipper here.
It's over, bro. I haven't seen anybody.
Well, do you guys want to shout anything out?
I'd like to shout out Mike Young, Jessica Wellington, Felicia Michaels.
Aww.
Hold on, let me swipe. Mike Vargas, Mike Evans.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Sweet Pea.
Rest in peace, Sweet Pea. I got drunk with Sweet Pea in Vegas once.
God, was he a legend, man. We should have a boxing. We should do a boxing podcast. I mean,
I'm doing one. I'll tell you about it after.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Mike, do you have anything you would like to shout out?
Just if you want to watch my show on Ficto, that would probably help Ficto. Just go.
How do you spell that?
Ficto.
Was it an app?
It's an app on your phone, so you watch TV on your phone. It's like a streaming thing. It's cool.
Oh, like Pluto.
Exactly. Like Pluto or like Quibi or any of those. But it's, the show's called Who the F is Mike Young? And Saget's in it and Stamos. Russell wasn't available.
I was never asked. I've never been asked to do one of Mike Young's projects. Listen, let me tell you something.
A whole other podcast.
Mike Young's life is like a really good hand at poker. It's all about Full House for him.
Let's just say when you got to go through Eddie to get Russell's schedule, it's not easy. Yo, bro, we're on the road. I'm doing this movie. I'd love Russell to be in it. You got to just look at his schedule, bro. You got to look at it. I got to look at it. I got to check your schedule.
Call me directly.
Yeah, you brass monkey.
I will. That is my brother from another mother. And when Rob calls you to stay with you because he's getting divorced, you'll see him soon.
Yep. Well, I want to find out he's getting divorced from his wife, not from him.
That's another story.
That's a whole other story.
Holy shit.
Well, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for everyone that was playing along. Thank you, Mike Vargas, for hanging out, putting yourself on camera. Thank you, Jason Marino. Thank you, Kia. I listen to your advice all the time during the game. You guys, once again, thank you so very much. Thanks, Michael. I hope everyone has a wonderful evening.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, kids.
Later.
Thank you so much. I love you guys.
Love you. Bye.
And you have been lied to.
I'm not telling that one.
Disney, believe you.
You're the real liar. Please stand up.
Right? She's totally serious.
And you have been lied to.